And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Breakaway with Pulisic. This could finish it, and it's a chance for Emerson to score with his first touch and finish this tie-off. Chelsea on the way through to the quarterfinals now.
Chilwell lifts the ball into the penalty area. Ziyech with the control and Ziyech with the finish. And Ziyech has sent Chelsea through to the semi-finals of the FA Cup for the fourth time in five seasons.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, the Chelsea FC podcast from The Athletic. On this episode, we reflect on a week of cup success as Chelsea overcome Atletico and see off Sheffield United. We'll catch up with the rest of the Blues news and answer your questions. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Hey listener, hope you're well. Matt Davis-Adams here to guide the Chelsea chat with my Blues buds. Liam Toomey is here. Morning, Liam.
Hello.
And so too Simon Johnson.
Hello.
And of course, Dominic Fifield.
Hello.
Right, later on we'll reflect on Chelsea's superb Champions League showing as the Blues book to place in the last eight. First though, Sheffield on Sunday. Chelsea 2, Sheffield United 0 at Stamford Bridge in the FA Cup quarter-final then. An Ollie Norwood own goal and a late Hakim Ziyech effort seeing a weary-looking Chelsea pass the Premier League's basement boys. Liam, you were there, as was I. Not a classic. Doesn't matter though, does it, in cup competitions?
It's pretty dull, wasn't it? I think it was kind of like the first day. I've had this in the back of my mind for a little while with these ghost games, but it was the first day I've properly been at Stamford Bridge and had a full-blown existential crisis while I'm watching a match. Like, what am I actually doing? What are we doing with football at a time like this? Because it just felt so weird, but glad it's happening, I guess. And Chelsea are heading back to Wembley, which, as you say, Matt, is all that matters. They didn't play well. They got the goal really without doing anything to deserve it. Speculative Chilwell shot that happened to go in. And it almost felt like that goal didn't do them any favours, because the fact that they hadn't had to work too hard for it meant that they didn't really up their game after it. And Sheffield United steadily gained in belief. I think they were trying to be as physical as possible and make the game as fragmented as possible. Christian Pulisic in particular felt the effects of that approach. And then it wasn't until Sheffield United really started coming close with that McGoldrick header, missing his contractually obliged goal against Chelsea, and a good chance for former Chelsea Academy boy Ryan Brewster off the bench, that they managed to finally get a counter-attack to work. And it was brilliantly finished by Ziyech, a move really that the game didn't deserve. But as we say, Chelsea heading back to Wembley, and there's still hope of avenging really the biggest disappointment of last season.
Yeah, we'll talk about the draw soon enough. Here's a tweet from Harry, though, asking, is there a reason we seem to struggle in the games where we're expected to easily win? Dom, I think the reason in this case is what Thomas Tuchel alluded to after the match, and that the players are knackered, basically, which is thoroughly understandable.
Yeah, they've had 14 games in 59 days. The longest gap between any of those fixtures has been 5 days, which has happened three times. I mean, it is a chock-a-block schedule. And it, even with what remains a lack of injuries, I know we can point to the absence of Thiago Silva and Tammy Abraham, but compared to other clubs, Chelsea have got away with this very, very well in terms of the state of the players and the physical state of the players. Even in that context, that number of games is going to leave them jaded. It's just, that's what happens. It's the reality of it. It's a logjam of fixtures. It's no surprise that Manchester United used exactly the same reasoning after their FA Cup tie at Leicester at the weekend as well, that Solskjaer came out and said that they were exhausted as well. And it's another club that's had European competition to contend with. They were playing a considerably better standard of opponent than Chelsea were, and they were overcome. They were beaten by Leicester. Chelsea were up against the worst team in the Premier League this season and just about got by. So it's no great surprise that fatigue does play a part. This international break, although some players will be involved, plenty of players will be involved in national team fixtures, it will provide some with a bit of a breather, which would be most welcome.
We saw Thomas Tuchel change the team up again. We'll talk about some of the academy boys shortly. But Simon, I wanted your take on some of the other players we saw get a start here. In particular, Kepa, Emerson and Christian Pulisic. I feel like the first two of those did pretty well. But despite getting man of the match from the BBC and the Chelsea Twitter poll, it was another slightly disappointing afternoon for Pulisic. Is that fair?
I wouldn't say it was disappointing. I think his finishing was disappointing. But there were a lot of promising signs, a few flashes of Christian Pulisic of last summer, that run between June and August. I thought he showed a bit of magic, which you have to say is one of the things perhaps missing from this Chelsea squad, that ability to beat a man with a bit of skill. He just didn't show that composure when it mattered in front of goal. And in fairness to him, when he was interviewed afterwards, he himself wasn't exactly, mind you, he never is, jumping for joy. He was quite honest, you know, that he was disappointed because he knows that I think it was only his third start under Tuchel. He knows that he needs to win Tuchel over and become a regular starter. He needs to be taking those kind of chances. But I would rather look on the bright side and sort of look at the fact that he took on a few players, beat them, and don't forget he was getting kick pillar to post as Liam raised. It was the reminder of Eden Hazard. It was just like, oh, I remember this. I'm sure Eden Hazard, if he was watching, was going, yeah, I've got a few mementos of that kind of treatment for all those years he was getting targeted. As for the other two, Kepa, you know, the saves he made were pretty straightforward. It must have been, thank his lucky stars, that McGoldrick contrived to miss from that. I still, every time I watch that replay, I don't know how he manages it. I think even I might have put that one away in my advanced years. And Emerson, yeah, I think he did a good job. But we sort of have to say that the two worst performances, you could say, from the Tuchel era have come in the FA Cup. It's quite funny. That trend can't continue given who they face in the next round.
No, absolutely not. Mason Mount, captain Chelsea, one of four starters on Sunday who graduated from the academy. Another one came off the bench in Reece James. Liam, your latest piece for The Athletic focuses on Chelsea's continued emphasis on youth in these post-Lampard times.
Yeah, and I have to credit the excellent Chelsea youth, I think, for bringing this to everyone's attention a few weeks ago after the win over Everton. He flagged that was the 100th consecutive game in which Chelsea had at least one starter from the academy in the first team. And that streak actually began with Maurizio Sarri playing Andreas Christensen and Ruben Loftus-Cheek. And it obviously ramped up during the Lampard era. And Tuchel has continued it largely because of the faith he's shown, continued to show in Mount, and the increased opportunities that Hudson-Odoi has had. So I thought that was worth focusing on after a match in which nothing else felt terribly significant. And I'd already had a nice chat with Michael Dewberry, who was a Chelsea Academy boy from the 1990s. He knows all about the kind of journey and what it means for an Academy boy to play for the Chelsea first team. And he spoke really well about the kind of balance that top clubs have to strike. Because obviously Chelsea are in a very different position now from when he played for them. Between development and success. And I think we're seeing that with a couple of the boys who didn't play against Sheffield United. Obviously, Tammy Abraham is having to battle for regular minutes. Fikayo Tomori is on loan. We don't know whether his long-term future lies at Chelsea anymore. I know someone that people were quite disappointed not to see in that game was Tino Angerin, who was instead involved in the PL2 match against Manchester City. My understanding is that was quite a late decision, which fits with what Thomas Tuchel was saying on Friday about trying to make every attempt to involve him. I think it just all speaks to the tension that Tuchel feels, as every Chelsea head coach feels to some degree or another, whereby as much as he stressed that the academy is going to be an important part of his overall vision, he has to win, and he has to win today. And so any academy boys who do play are going to face the same expectations to deliver as the big money signings.
Just as an aside on Andrin, by the way, I commentated on that PL2 game on Sunday that he played in. He is not match fit, I don't think. He's struggled to get a run of games over the last year or so. And I've seen that in the last few weeks in the games that he's played for the under-23s. He tends to struggle as it goes on. So I think it's probably not the worst thing to just let him have a run of 90-minute games for the under-23s. And then he can hopefully make a proper impact when he does get some first-team football. Dom, a couple of weeks ago, you were pointing out that it's not new for Chelsea managers to go on massively long unbeaten runs at the start of their tenures, but it's 14 now for Chelsea, and Thomas Tuchel still yet to taste defeat. It does happen fairly regularly, as you say, but it's worth giving some praise to, isn't it? It's been hugely impressive, even if Sunday's performance wasn't.
Absolutely. To go from ninth in the Premier League to fourth, and to make progress in the FA Cup and most notably in the Champions League and getting beyond, you know, the leaders of La Liga, I think that's properly eye-catching. And you know, seven consecutive clean sheets and two goals conceded in those 14 games, that's a remarkable statistic. The way that the players have adapted to, I don't know, the industrious nature of what he wants them to do has been excellent. The way they swarm around the pitch and close people down, and I think that probably plays a significant part in that defensive record. And there's still scope for improvement. I mean, even Tuchel would admit that. And that's actually quite exciting. If they can become more expansive and get more incisive as well, then they've got a proper blend that would make the likes of Manchester City sit up and take notice, basically, for next season. So, yeah, it's a fantastic start. He just looks like a seasoned manager who knows what he's doing and has made a proper impact. And I don't mean that as a criticism of his predecessor either. I know we struggle, and I think everybody struggles still. Almost every praise of Tuchel becomes an implied criticism of Frank Lampard. It doesn't have to be like that. I think, you know, we can just say that was the end of the Lampard era, and Tuchel has done everything we could possibly ask of him since taking up the reins couple of months back.
So Tuchel's taken Chelsea to Wembley then. Jubilation turned to exasperation, at least in my car, when I heard Dion Dublin pair Chelsea with Manchester City in the semis though. Simon, what have Chelsea got to do to beat them? But producer Lucy pointing out that they've got their second leg against Dortmund in the Champions League before that, and then the League Cup final against Spurs the weekend after. So maybe if there ever is a good time to play City, this could be it.
Yeah, I mean, that run of games potentially might be a factor, but as City showed at Everton, they can sort of leave De Bruyne and Mahrez on the bench and then bring them on. They have a frightening squad, but Chelsea are in a much better position or far better equipped, more well organised than they were at the back end of Lampard's reign when they faced each other at Stamford Bridge. I'm sure Man City weren't exactly reacting to the draw with great delight. I'm sure they would have preferred to have got Southampton like everybody else. What did Chelsea have to do? It's more of the same, really. They're going to have to be as defensively assured as they have been. But where they have to improve is up top. They have to take their chances. It's something that has continued to be a problem with this group of players, not just this season, but it was a factor last season as well. They're just not clinical enough. So against City, they can't afford to squander any chances. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how far Chelsea have genuinely progressed under Tuchel.
Well, that semi-final is going to be played on the weekend of the 17th of April. Next today, we'll talk Roman Abramovich.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So Chelsea's owner did an interview with Forbes magazine, which was published this past weekend. Very rare we get to hear from Roman Abramovich, so worth a mention. David Smith wants to know any thoughts from the pod on what Abramovich had to say in his interview last week. Liam, I'm sure you've read it. There were some interesting quotes there, and interesting in and of itself that he's chosen now as the time to speak.
Yeah, Abramovich speaks so rarely that it lends his words more significance when he decides to break his silence. This is one of the few examples where the tabloid expression "breaks his silence" is actually merited, because he's borderline mute in terms of his public persona. But we did always know that one of the things that he's been determined to be more vocal on is Chelsea's community work, particularly against anti-Semitism, more recently against racism with the Say No to Hate campaign that they've just launched. He made it very clear that he's very proud and very committed to the foundation work that Chelsea do. But I think probably the comments that would have been most interesting to a lot of fans would have been him talking about his ownership of the club, which he never ever does in any form. And it was quite interesting, his claim that he kind of wishes he wasn't a football club owner because of the extra scrutiny it's given him. That's an interesting thing for him to say, because he definitely has had some very negative press, or quite damaging press in the last couple of years as well, which I'm sure has partly come because of the profile he's got as Chelsea's owner. He probably wasn't as specific on the decision-making process behind the sacking of Frank Lampard as some supporters would have hoped, but he certainly talked in more general terms about how Chelsea always back themselves to make the right decisions when they choose to change managers, no matter how difficult it can prove to be. And I thought it was quite interesting the way he talked about watching matches as an owner. And he spoke about them as like an exam for the coach. I think that's fascinating. When you hear about some of the stories, you know, in Carlo Ancelotti's book about some of the meetings he was summoned to with Abramovich, or the messages he got after games that he'd lost, it's very interesting that Abramovich views it that way, and very much views it as each game and each result, each performance as reflective of the coach. And I think that speaks to why Chelsea have ended up changing so often. But he was also very keen to praise the work of Chelsea women, and spoke particularly highly of the work Emma Hayes has done in charge. And I thought that was nice of him to do. We know that he met them in Israel a couple of years ago. So he's very invested in that side of the club, and you can see it on the pitch.
Dom, you've been covering Chelsea for an awful long time. Have you ever come close to interviewing him? Is it something you've ever tried to secure, or is it just kind of understood that it's not going to happen?
Yeah, not going to happen. It's funny, actually, we spoke about this quite recently. The times we've sort of been in Abramovich's company, I mean, you can count them on the fingers of one hand. I remember a press versus Mourinho's coaching staff game of football in Los Angeles at UCLA's campus in 2007, where Abramovich and his then girlfriend Dasha were on the touchline and sort of joining in the celebrations as Mourinho pulled off a few good saves as a goalkeeper and then pulled a hamstring, conceding a penalty. and then substituted himself and brought on an international goalkeeper, incidentally, to actually face the penalty. But beyond that, really, I mean, I remember there was a there was the first game, that his first Premier League game in charge was at Anfield, and I was covering Liverpool at the time, and the press box at Anfield in the main stand in those days was right next to the director's box, and the away directors are closest to the press contingent. And Abramovich was there sitting in the front row as Chelsea won 2-1. I think Veron and Hasselbank scored the goals. And at the end of the game, one of my colleagues, John Buster Edwards from the Daily Mail, made a beeline. We were all filing copy, and he just sort of squeezed past us right to the edge, leant over the barrier and started shouting to Roman, "Roman, Roman, can I have a word?" And then as Roman departed up the steps, ignoring him, to go down into the director's area, Buster followed him into the sort of lobby area where the trophies were kept at Anfield, and was badgering him, badgering him, badgering him, and three ex-SAS men swarmed onto him and basically ushered him away in quite a sinister fashion. But the reality was that Buster got an acknowledgement and a sort of few muttered words from Roman that actually carried the back pages the next morning about how this was the reason that he bought Chelsea for occasions like this, wins at Anfield. But genuinely, that's about as close as it's got. It's very, very, very rare. And I've often wondered, I mean, this has gone to Forbes, which is very much a business magazine. I've often wondered what would happen if I ever got the chance to interview him. And I think it would, this particular article, I can see Chelsea supporters loving everything that was said in it. The sense of community that came through and Abramovich's commitment, even, you know, it felt like a rather flippant remark about how the scrutiny of being a chairman, it was put in there with a gentle smile and chuckle, apparently. I can see Chelsea fans loving it. I can see fans of every other club in the country looking at it and thinking, wow, this journalist has given Abramovich a platform here and has not actually quizzed him about how he made his money. And unfortunately, that is a theme that I think journalistically you would probably have to investigate. You'd probably have to look at if you were ever given an audience with Roman Abramovich. And I suspect that's the reason why none of us will ever get an audience with Roman Abramovich, if I'm honest.
Simon, if there was one thing that you could ask him, what would it be?
Can you lend me some money? I mean, I get Dom's point. I think any interview with Abramovich though is going to be heavily controlled.
Yeah.
So even if you wanted to ask those questions, you'd probably get rugby tackled as the words were passing your lips, probably from some of those same ex-SAS men. I think one of the issues I'd want to ask him about is the stadium. What's going on with the stadium? Is it going to happen? Can you? Is there any sort of chance you can get this thing back off the ground? Because it was one of the things that got Chelsea fans talking. You go to Stamford Bridge these days, and it is an ageing ground, especially when you go to the likes of the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, etc. And for Chelsea to be dazzling the sort of the new signings that they want to lure to Stamford Bridge, I think a shiny new stadium is a part of that. Stamford Bridge is only going to get older and more sort of behind the times as each year passes. So, yeah, that would be one of the many things I'd want to ask him about, probably along with how much money you're going to bid for Haaland, which is the obsession right now.
We need to know what happens next as well, don't we? I mean, that's got to be in there. You know, what happens when Abramovich isn't there anymore? What is the contingency plan? What has been put in place that safeguards the club's future? And I'm sure there are things, and we're told that there are these plans exist, and that there is a sort of parachute there. But it would be interesting to know what that was.
Just a couple of things that came to mind for me that weren't in that interview that I would quite like to see Abramovich comment on at some stage. One would be just kind of his relationship with Marina Granovskaya and, you know, how that's evolved, how that works in terms of the running of Chelsea, because that is the relationship that runs Chelsea Football Club. So it'd be quite interesting to hear him talk about that. I'm not sure he ever will, but that would just be quite interesting to me. And the other thing was something I saw Matt Law, the Daily Telegraph, raise, which I think is maybe not one of the weightier topics that Abramovich could talk about, but interesting nonetheless, is just how the standoff with the UK government and not being able to come to the UK even before the pandemic to watch Chelsea, how that's changed how he approaches the ownership of the club, or how it's changed his experience as a fan. I just think that would be quite interesting to hear him talk about as well, because that's been a massive change from what was, you know, what the first sort of 15 years of his ownership to the last couple.
Well, Abramovich, like the rest of us, will have been buoyed by Chelsea's excellent performance in the Champions League last 16. We'll reflect on that next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
So the Blues through to the last eight of the Champions League for the first time since 2014, after they saw off Atletico Madrid 2-0 at Stamford Bridge in the second leg of their round of 16 tie to claim a 3-0 aggregate win. Simon, that first goal felt like a bit of a moment for the three players involved in it, in Werner, Havertz and Ziyech.
Yeah, and he brought back memories of Drogba's goal against Barcelona in the semi-final in 2012, sort of similar kind of counter-attack, same end, same cross, you know, from the left-hand side, same kind of miss, not the best finish, and the goalkeeper making a bit of a hash of it. But it was at my end where I was sitting. I was in the East Lower and had a great view of it. Werner, who's had a lot of criticism all season, not just from us, but he was magnificent in that goal, because it started from him doing the hard yards, you know, to block that cross or get a semi-block on that cross. Conte, who was my man of the match by a distance, heads it on. And Havertz, very cool, calm, collective, and so on and so forth. Big goal for Ziyech. He'd been struggling to get into the game at that point, and it was noticeable how it lifted him. Confidence-wise, he became much more expressive after that, much more involved, showing much more quality that perhaps we saw in the autumn. But I was just, overall, I was just thoroughly impressed with the way Chelsea played. There was a lot of criticism again for Atletico Madrid, as there was after the first leg, and I just sort of think, no, I think the focus should be on the way that Chelsea played rather than try and sort of relegate the opposition to some kind of rubbish team. You know, they are top of La Liga. I just think Chelsea were the better side in both legs. And as I highlighted in my piece afterwards, though, that's one of the best games I've seen Conte play since the Europa League final, where he played, let's be honest, with a questionable knee injury. He just seemed everywhere. There was this, and I made this point, I think, and I made it in the reader's comments bit below my piece. I'll just never forget where I myself was like, hang on a minute, where's he come from? Because 1 minute there was a throw-in in front of me and I saw Conte to my right. I was like, ah. And then like a second later, Atletico played a ball in behind the Chelsea defence. I was like, oh, that's a good ball. And then there he was. And I was like, has he got there? Like, has he managed that?
Amazing. You'd have sold him in January, wouldn't you?
Oh, don't start. I got a lot of grief on following my piece. They're like, oh, you weren't saying this a few months ago. No, I mean, playing like that, yeah, I mean, obviously it's a no-brainer. You don't sell a player when they're in that kind of form. And fair play, this is a sign of Tuchel's man management. You know, he's been very careful in terms of getting Conte back from his injury, his hamstring injury that he had in January. He's managed him very well. We had this debate, didn't we, Dom, about, and he rightly said, he hammered me for even suggesting that his place was in jeopardy. But Jorginho and Kovacic did start very well under Tuchel. But yeah, Conte was different class. You got to say that a player like him, we talked about Man City earlier, you have a player like him in Chelsea's team in the big games, and they become a totally different proposition to face.
So if he was man of the match, Dom, was Thiago Silva a close second?
Yeah, they were, look, it was great. That was lovely to see. And there were obvious throwbacks to be made with John Terry, you know, preaching from the sidelines on the occasions that he wasn't playing. But I don't think we should get too carried away on it. I think it sums up the man quite nicely. And Thomas Tuchel spoke well about it on Friday last week ahead of the Sheffield United game. When Thiago Silva joins a club, he is completely committed to that club and his life revolves around everything that that club does on the pitch. And, you know, it must have been frustrating for him to be missing out on an occasion that big. But he was preaching from the sidelines because he's living, you know, the moments out the team are playing out on that pitch.
Look, Thiago's reaction. Oh, there's nothing wrong with that hamstring. Look, God, he's passed his fitness test for the next game as well.
He probably also looks at it and thinks, this might be my last opportunity to win the Champions League. So it's probably given greater significance there. But it was a lovely image and a lovely sort of sideshow to the main event. I mean, it was a sensational result over two legs for Chelsea against Atletico and an inconceivable one. When that draw was made, we did not think that they would, I don't want to say breeze necessarily, but that they would progress quite so smoothly against Atletico Madrid. It looked such a daunting tie, but they really did a job on them both matches, and that is huge credit to Tuchel and to his players and selections for both those games.
So Atleti out the way then, Porto up next in the quarterfinals. Liam, could the draw have gone any better, or am I underestimating the team that just knocked out Juventus?
Well, I mean, we won't know until they actually play the games whether it was the most favourable draw for Chelsea, but it certainly looks that way. I think going into it, every team left in the Champions League would have wanted Porto. You know, I didn't watch every second of that tie against Juve, but I think the consensus on it is that that result was just as much about Juventus's deficiencies as it was things Porto did well. And as much as they will be a spirited, difficult team to play against, I think you'd much rather have them than certainly Bayern Munich and Manchester City. I think those were the key teams for Chelsea to avoid at the quarterfinal stage. Yes, you're going to have to beat a great team, at least one, to win the Champions League. But you don't necessarily want to play them in the quarterfinal if you can avoid it. And the fact that City and Bayern are in the same half of the draw now with PSG and Borussia Dortmund, Haaland and Mbappe, who, you know, will be live underdogs in those two quarterfinals. That looks like a very difficult road to the final for whichever team makes it through. Chelsea will certainly fancy themselves against Porto. Then I think they will fancy themselves against Liverpool, who they've already worked once at Anfield since Tuchel took over, or Real Madrid, who have not looked at the same level on the European stage since Cristiano Ronaldo left. So it's a very different road to the final to the one Chelsea had in 2012, where they did actually beat the two best teams in Europe to win that competition somehow. On paper, it's an easier path, but I think, you know, they have to win the games, but I think it's a hugely promising draw for them. And Tuchel has a real chance to do something special here.
First leg of that game against Porto is on Wednesday, the 7th of April. That's away, I guess, venue TBC. And then the return leg due to be played at Stamford Bridge. That's Tuesday, the 13th of April. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-23s played out a hugely entertaining 2-2 draw with Manchester City at Cobham on Sunday. City running away with the league, but they fell behind when informed Tiano Ballo put Andy Meyer's side one up. Rory Delapson, Liam, then levelled soon afterwards. He's got 20 goals in PL2 this season. Levi Colwill put one through his own net, but then equalised in the 89th minute. It means that Chelsea are unbeaten in four. They're fifth in the table. They've got six games left to go. The under-18s grateful to Miles Pert-Harris, who stepped off the bench on his return from injury to earn a point in a 2-2 draw at Leicester. That means Ed Brand's boys are sixth in the 13-team PL South. They go to Southampton in the league this weekend before they face Fylde in the fourth round of the FA Youth Cup in the first week of April. And no game for the women's team this past weekend, but they're gearing up for the first leg of their Champions League quarterfinal tie with Wolfsburg. That's at King's Meadow this coming Wednesday, the 24th of March. If you're in the UK, you can see that on BT Sport. Kicks off at 4 p.m. The women then have a league game against Villa to follow on Sunday. Right, that's just about it for this week. Before we go, let's hear what the chaps have been working on for Athletic subscribers to enjoy. Dom, Chelsea supporters might enjoy your piece on the misery at Tottenham.
although I think things have picked up slightly after their win at Aston Villa on the Sunday. But yeah, there's a piece up there analysing Hugo Lloris's post-match interview from their unbelievable capitulation at Dynamo Zagreb last Thursday night, which, yeah, it might be worth a chuckle for some Chelsea fans, I'm sure.
Liam, we mentioned your piece on the academy players currently getting games for Chelsea. You also teamed up with Stuart James to profile Mark Gerhey, who's been doing great things for Swansea.
Yeah, he's been arguably the best centre-back in the Championship this season. I know he's incredibly highly rated by Steve Cooper, who's managed him really well, it has to be said. He brought him into the team slowly, but has really empowered him this season in a back three. Gerhey's looked excellent, but I think just as interestingly, as far as our piece was concerned, he's approaching an early crossroads in his career this summer. He has effectively 2 years left on his contract. One of those is a team option that Chelsea will definitely activate if they need to preserve his value. But it's looking like there will have to be some sort of decision made on him this summer, because Chelsea don't normally allow players out on loan to reach 1 year left on their deals. They usually make them extend before then. Our understanding is that that's not going to be an easy conversation, because I think Gerhey is wary of ending up in kind of like a cycle of loans and stalling the momentum that he's built up in his career. He wants to play Premier League football next year no matter what. But there's also the argument for maybe like a sort of Nathan Ake style path where you sell him with a buyback option or something like that. So that's going to be one of many difficult decisions that Chelsea face with their defenders this summer, because a lot of them are either out of contract or running out of contract.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what they do with Gerhey and co. Simon, how about you? What have you got on the agenda for this international break?
Well, on Tuesday, we're starting a blitz on cult heroes. And I've interviewed Mikel Janobi at great length. It was an interview conducted over 2 days. The first day was interrupted because some food arrived at his flat. Not my door, Don, before you say anything. I resisted the urge for a takeaway on that occasion. But it's I've always found Mikel an extraordinary interview. He's someone that will speak very honestly. There's no question that he won't answer. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away because there's obviously a lot of subjects covered, but he speaks from the heart. He speaks as someone that is still rearing, I think, the man of his departure. He didn't want to leave Chelsea when he did. Conte did a lot of great things for Chelsea, but the way he treated Mikel was questionable, to say the least. But there's lots of great memories that Mikel covers. There's a lot of bad memories that Mikel covers. Yeah, it's a great read. We're talking over 6,000 words here, so so yeah, it's an Athletic long read, but I promise you, every word is worth reading.
I think I might read it over 2 days as well, with some food in the middle.
Looking forward to getting stuck into that. Remember, listener, if you're not currently a subscriber, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/ChelseaPod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/ChelseaPod. That's just about it for this week. Many thanks to Simon, to Liam, to Dom, and to producer Lucy, but mainly to you, listener. We'll catch up with you again same time next week. From all of us here, though, for now, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.